Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Yacht Crew Vlogs right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rio. I am your host, and I'm very pleased to welcome my next guest, Gordon Foote. And he has quite an extensive background, so I will ask him to introduce himself and what his background is.
Well, thank you very much, Rio. And thank you for inviting me on your show. It's great to have a diversity of all the people that you have on here talking. And you've picked one from across the pond here in the form of myself. I'm from Plymouth, England, in the United Kingdom. And I guess I have an extensive background only because I've been around long enough to have lived through it. 4 decades of the maritime. So where did I start off? I think probably the age of 5, I decided that the maritime was for me and I wanted to join the Royal Navy. So that's our defence, warships and such. And I was 5 years old and I went to Portland and saw a Navy Day, which is like an open day for people to come and visit. I saw all these wonderful ships and thought, that's the life for me. Go and visit the whole world, join the Navy. And lo and behold, when I left school at the age of 17, I joined the Royal Navy, but got drafted to submarines as a volunteer, only because as an engineer, I thought it would be more challenging. And apart from having a job with NASA or something, there wasn't going to be anything else more exciting. So I joined submarines and had my first career in submarines for the Royal Navy on a variety of different submarines doing different tasks. And after that, when I retired, I decided that I wanted to stay at sea, but to be afloat this time instead of underwater. So I'm part of the Merchant Navy now in the offshore disciplines, and I undertake offshore construction projects, primarily critical infrastructure. So if you know about the underwater or the telecom cable that crisscross the oceans, the offshore renewables, which is a lot more popular now and hitting the headlines in all countries that are trying to take advantage of the renewable energy, so wind turbines offshore, and of course, oil and gas infrastructure with pipelines. That's pretty much it. About half my life has been under the water and the other half has been on top. But every day is a fun day. Every day is a learning day. And yeah, pretty much experience across a whole range of different projects. So it's not always building things as well. I also get involved in environmental projects. So I've been fortunate on a couple of occasions back in 2019 with the research and development for the ocean cleanup, removing plastics from the Pacific Ocean. So that was a great pull. And I got invited back again with System 2 last year. So I spent a couple of months in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch getting all those rotten plastics out of the ocean. So that was entertaining as well. So yeah, the maritime has a diversity of people and disciplines and jobs that you can do. So yeah, from yachting to cruising to pushing boxes around the world, I tend to go out there and build things and remove things from the ocean.
I came across an article that had been done about you in regards to allyship. Now we see that word kind of bantered about quite often. Everyone's an ally for one thing or another. What does that word mean for you within the context of the maritime industry?
That article that you noted there actually was a sort of off a tangent to what I normally do, but it was engineering based and it was actually for Field Engineer, which is a website that was set up to encourage engineering STEM subjects and also supported women doing that. And amongst many things I get up to as an ambassador for STEM subjects and women in the maritime, I've always been focused about it and support. And I think I've said on more than one occasion before, what it means literally is just being a decent human being. That might sound a bit strange because everyone says, well, I'm a decent human being. I do that. But in truth, we're not. If you look in the mirror every day and ask yourself that question, I'm sure there's a lot that would look towards being a bit more self-centered than really what they should be, or out for their own or out for what they can get. A lot of career-driven people, unfortunately, just look at the career ladder and not necessarily the people they're stepping on, but to get to the heights that they wish to get to. I guess I'm a little bit different in that respect because I mean, served in submarines in the era where there was no women. It was definitely sort of a crash course on psychology and psychological safety, I guess, before the term even came into being all those years back. But it takes a special kind of idiot or a special kind of professional to operate in extreme environments like that. So I like to think that doing those sort of jobs teaches you a lot about yourself and being comfortable with yourself and who you are and how you interact on a social level with your colleagues at work. Then having moved to the Merchant Navy, obviously I would like to see more women, but there are women involved in the particular disciplines I work alongside, which is great. And a whole variety of different sort of educational levels or skill sets or what people do on the ship that I'm on. So it can be scientists, environmentalists, riggers, welders. So I come across every walk of life and sort of social spectrum. But what I like to see is when people are assisting and supporting each other. And that can come in quite simple ways. But just giving somebody a hand with the stores or something because they're on a ladder or a stairwell, helping somebody out at the gangway. Maybe it is cold and they want a cup of tea. It's just simple things like that. So it's, I don't know, it's some of it's built in because it's like, I'd like to term etiquette. And I know it's similar across the maritime. There'll be differences within the yachting community to the cruise line community or project construction and offshore work. But there is always that sort of unwritten etiquette. And that's sort of in the bloodline, I like to think, of those that are purest maritime. But those that are project staff will come on, I like to instigate that sort of feeling as well. So there's an etiquette, the right things to do, or how you can support or assist other people. And I know it might be a bit strange for people to come across the word allyship, but really it is about being an ally, which in real terms means that, being a decent human being and helping each other out. There are a lot, I think now, different quotes that have come out, what getting down to the nuts and bolts of people, what they're driving for when they sort of use that term. But really, it's along the lines of assisting a community or persons around you that are marginalized on the basis that you have some privilege. So if you have some privilege, it's announced to you, you should go out of your way to make it assisting and supporting or to be more comfortable for those that are underrepresented, marginalized. So it's not specific to gender, although with only still about 2% females operating within the maritime, that's a given, really. So any ship that you're on, even in cruise ships, there'd be a greater number of women, for instance, but not necessarily so in project construction. So it doesn't always be, or it shouldn't be termed in a gender-specific way, because also there are males could do with support or assistance. So being an ally is like being a friend. But yeah, work colleagues and you're in the work environment, so it's not best buddies and it's hugs all day. So it's not the pink and fluffy type stuff. I like to think about it as just being a decent human being. And if somebody needs some support or a lift on one day or assistance, then you should be able there to provide it. And from a privileged position, so if you're on a supervisory manager or leadership role, you should be attuned to that. So emotional intelligence comes into it, knowing the people you're working with, the cultural differences, religious differences. There's a whole host of different things. So being respectful in that sort of context, that's what being an ally is about, I believe. Yeah, and I think that the article that you mentioned was more based around engineering, but the whole emphasis was about lone working, small teams working. So I discussed being an ally in that sort of framework. So in the context of working in small teams, you might be the new member of that team. You might not know the in-jokes or where the restaurant or the cafe is that you go. You might not be familiar with that particular work site. And in contract engineering, whatever professional level you're at, sometimes you are put in at the deep end. Oh, go and join this team. You're going to drive 1,000 miles or something. This is where it is. And you're going to be there like 4 days working. So instantly you have to get on with those people, build a rapport, some form of relationship. And why wouldn't you? Because if you do, it makes your life easy, makes everyone else's life easy. And of course, if you're at a junior level, it's all to do with, you know, maybe a bit of mentoring or at least learning. And you have to learn fast when you first join your team. The other team members will be more experienced. So in that sort of respect, it's the privilege that the more senior members of a team have got to look out for those that have just joined. And of course, as the teams get smaller or you're working in remote locations, that has a greater significance.
In your years, as you mentioned, you've been in the industry, the maritime sort of sector for a few years. Have you noticed a change from when you first started to now?
Well, 4 decades in the maritime. So if we discount nearly two decades in submarines, where it was single sex and obviously working towards a mission, everyone was mission orientated and it's defense related. So it's a little bit of a different environment there. But again, still a hierarchical structure. In the Merchant Navy, working top of the oceans now, for those amount of years, I mean, I'm just so passionate about the maritime. I paint it a rosy picture all the time. Everything's absolutely fantastic. And I love the maritime. And that's the way I wish it to be. And that's why I don't sit on the fence. But unfortunately, the fact that we're having this discussion now, or I'm still writing articles about it, or I'm still promoting a kinder way of going to work and being a kinder person at work to others, means that we still have a long way to go, basically. So from a female perspective, about getting promotion, of not banging your head on that glass ceiling all the time, like it, the fact that there is a celebration when certain females attain certain roles. They might be the first captain in the Middle East tanker fleet or something like that. You know, these sort of milestones are to be celebrated, but not sitting on the fence. I say, hey, we're in the 21st century now. Why are we having to celebrate these things? Why isn't there more of it? Why isn't this a weekly thing? Not, this is the first time ever. We should not be still hitting those firsts, but that's reality. And I'm always a bit of an optimist. So that's the way I look at things. We've got a very long way still to go. But I think if people like yourself and myself and the colleagues I work with in different working groups, this different sort of associations and institutes, all that's getting promoted across the professional level within the maritime. So we can't hit all the people all the time globally, but through a whole variety of different efforts and avenues, and like now, even through social media, we're making those little differences, I think. Maybe not the right term to use, but sort of educating people that need educating sometimes. That's the sad part. So, and that comes down to people who are currently in senior positions. So some of the supervisory upper-level management, I would imagine quite a lot of them onshore as well. And I'm not going to discount chief engineers and masters of vessels. Some of those that have had themselves a 40-year or thereabouts career to get to that stage, I think not necessarily generational, but have left those force behind. So when they have the greater or larger responsibility about a whole vessel, its cargo and a crew or something, it's sad to see sometimes a crew at the bottom of that pecking order. Whereas my belief is that they should always remain at the very top of that list of things to do and what to be concerned of and who to be looking out for. So yeah, a long way to go. So I think there's a gradual trickle, and I think it's only through the great efforts of many colleagues that are out there actually voicing their opinions, not sitting on the fence and doing something about it. And I think that's the main thing. It's got to be actionable. So I don't, the good work that some people do in conferences and luncheons and webinars and that, as long as it's not just a talking shop. So as long as there's something actionable that comes out of it and it is well-meaning, even if it's not that successful, but it's going in the right direction, then fair game to them. That's what you want to see. And it's good that they're being talked about. And a great many taboo subjects, for instance, that were never discussed in the last 10 years. Sometimes it's the pandemic that has brought this on. For instance, suicide, mental health, well-being, etc. It's good that's come to the forefront. But like we saw during the pandemic, a great many institutes and leadership entities within the maritime focused a lot on that. But I've seen already anyway that once the pandemic was finished, they went back to their day jobs, didn't want to do Zoom anymore. That was it. So was it just a talking shop? Waste of time. So, you know, we don't need sympathy. There has to be some sort of measure of empathy, or at least some understanding from some of these larger groups, etc., towards what the basic seafarer is going through and what they're doing. But like I say, it needs some sort of actionable results, something on the ground that's actually doing good.
Do you think when issues happen that companies will take those issues and use them for marketing purposes as opposed to actually wanting to make a change?
God forbid. Nobody would do that, would they? I think we see it across a great many industries. The pink washing, the green washing, ticking boxes. Yeah. And it's unfortunate that's come into our vocabulary now. Things like tick boxing and green washing and pink washing. They're quite ludicrous when you think about it. So, yeah. We had it in the UK. I'm sure it's affected other ones with the pink washing, where it was feminine products. So even if it was a razor or something like that, just because it came out in pink, it was double the price.
Yeah,
we get it with climate change and decarbonization. If there's something somebody can latch on somewhere that ticks a box, the ESG, we're doing all the good things. We're hugging as many trees as we can. But in reality, there's nothing actual, nothing sustainable that's happening behind that. So a lot of it is hot air. And I think the mental health and well-being is sort of those that had, I would imagine, no knowledge or concern about the seafarer that was out there that decided that would be a platform that they would launch themselves on. There's one or two that have come good where we have apps. And even myself, I think, well,
app.
Well, how's an app going to fix something when you're that messed up? We need assistance or whatever. But we do live in a remote environment. We can't go and seek professional help when you're on a ship halfway around the world. The next port call might be 2 weeks away or something. So at least there's that thought. And of course, off the back of providing an app, which will hopefully make you feel better or take your mind to other avenues or give you some solace or assistance, then thinking about the connectivity even, because I don't think really Wi-Fi or the basic seafarers connectivity was a concern of many shipping companies, however large or small they may be. They just saw it as long as they could communicate with the bridge and back and where you were going. You're going from A to B, fine. But, you know, I think they forget seafarers have lives as well, and their lives carry on. They have families. They have commitments towards a car or house or bereavement or something. So I think it became a lot more understood that the seafarer needed a high-quality connectivity. And if somebody's producing an app and gone to great lengths to look into the content of those apps and use psychologists and mental health professionals to provide the content for them, and they can get them out there, then that's good. And that has happened on more than one occasion where those services have been provided. So I think that's good, but could count on multiple hands all the different organisations that took on the banner of mental health and wellbeing during the pandemic. And of course, it was all to do with the seafarer, and we have to support the seafarers. But it didn't get better, it got worse. So there was not only the crew change crisis, there was then the leave for seafarers. So although the rest of the world didn't have lockdowns anymore and everyone thought the pandemic was over, a great many seafarers, and even to this day, cannot disembark from their ships when they're in port at the moment. They literally can't go down the gangway, whether they have a pass, a written confirmation, liaison with the port agents. There are a lot of nations that are still instilling that. Or in fact, in some nations where the ports operate under different authorities, that particular port has decided that no seafarers are going to leave the vessel. And I think I'm not a doctor, of course, but even from a medical point of view, all of that situation was absolutely ludicrous, because if anyone was safe or protected, not infected, it would be the seafarer, because they just spent the last 3 months in their tin can on a ship. So if there was any issue or infection, it would be from port workers and those that were local on the land interacting with the whole rest of the community day in and day out, as opposed to seafarers that are already basically under their own lockdown anyway. But there you go. Yeah, so a couple of apps have come out good with that. There has been formal training by creditable bodies in relation to pastoral care, mental health and well-being.
That is one question that I have for you, because I know that you see a lot of schools out there on the yachting side of things anyways. They're offering sexual harassment cases, bullying cases, or counseling or courses. They're charging a lot of money for it. Even when they go to do their STCW, it isn't, the mental health aspect of it isn't taught by somebody who is accredited. It's just possibly some ex-chief steward or a captain who's going over the paperwork. How can we fix that? How can we make sure that those people that are not only teaching those on board, as the maritime industry moves forward and does take mental health more seriously, how can we ensure that the people that are teaching these courses are accredited?
The courses in particular that I've mentioned, I think there's at least four that I've done, are accredited, and that's by a bona fide body who provides training in the first instance. It's not something that was set up in the pandemic. Invariably, you can do your due diligence and look behind the scenes. So, I mean, anyone can knock up a really nice looking logo and that. But if it's one of the flag registries, for instance, or if it's a bona fide training provider, maritime, that is well established for a great many years, and then look behind the learning outcomes, what the course content is going to be, and who actually provided that content. And when you look behind it, as long as it's got someone who is psychiatrist or psychologist, etc., or with a medical background, then to me, I'm happy, and I undertook their training. But of course, there was a lot of people quickly on the bandwagon on a whole multiple forms of different kinds of training that were not well established, had very limited view on the maritime, and were just trying to quickly do a conversion so they could sell another course to somebody. That's quite despicable. If I wanted to get fellow engineers to do some critical infrastructure work offshore, I wouldn't go to McDonald's and hire their staff. So it's kind of the same thing. If they haven't got the medical background, they are basically well-meaning, maybe, but doing more harm than good. So seeking professional advice or those courses or forms of education that are based purely from a medical background, then that's my way of thinking that the content is supervised, is accountable, is responsible. It's saying the right things. It's backed by modern recent science, because don't forget, some of even our biases and our attitudes, maybe towards gambling, alcoholism, mental health problems, has not only been a taboo, but where it has been spoken about has been in a negative form, and it's been quite irresponsible, and legal counts against those sort of forms. So I think that as time has gone on, we've become not only more understanding of societal problems or social issues and challenges like that, but the more modern way of how to affect some form of support and assistance. And yeah, but the other thing you've got to think about is that's one form of obtaining yourself some education from a good source, like I've said. But of course, at sea, these professionals aren't going to be there. So to some respects, they are reliant on the leadership, whether it be the chief engineer or the master, or like myself in a leadership role, providing on occasion within the shift patterns, trying to get the whole crew. I remember the vessel I was on in the first year was like 140 POB, multiple nationalities, obviously multiple languages there as well. So I put together a short briefing, and the intent that I had was that it wasn't going to be a lecture. It wasn't me being the mouthpiece. It was me as a leader offering up to the crew just a 15-minute sessions where anything went. I was going to put across the education that I'd had and some life experience that I'd had about lockdown, but in the submarine, you are totally locked down. So the lack of communication, the lack of support and everything, putting that into sort of a personal way and then just delivering to them, hey, this is me. I might be the leader on it, but I've had these issues in the past. I've had to undertake months on end with no communication. The support services aren't that good, but we're here as a team together. We will get through it, sort of thing. And the aspects around mental health, because even from the English-speaking world, Western Europe, there has been a taboo or the wrong words used with regards to mental health, because everyone thinks, oh, it needs a psychiatrist. There's obviously something wrong. It was always seen in a black or a negative. And there was always biases against using that sort of terminology. But of course, mental health is all to do with well-being, and it is a positive. So we all have mental health. It's how we're feeling on that day. And the percentage, if you like, of how our outside environment, hygiene, what we're eating, fitness levels, our sleep patterns, which is what a seafarer's always used to with regards to set meal times, the dietary needs, their room. Is there a gym on the ship? Is there not? How do we get exercise? How do we feel good in ourselves? And how do we absorb all this sort of strange information about the pandemic that's coming in and still carry on and do our day-to-day job? So those briefings were a way of allowing the crew to discuss all those matters, because again, in a pretty much a male dominated area there, they're all coverall wearing, hairy chested, roughy tufty, don't ever talk to each other, not out loud about anything like that. So from my perspective, I was shown, look, we can talk about it. I've now talked about it. If anyone has serious issues like that. And of course, there are always problems at home, whether it's elderly parents, whether they were going to get vaccination, whether their country that they were going back to gave a damn, or whether they would even be allowed back in. Were all issues that needed discussing. And that affects our well-being by not being able to discuss it. So, and that was good. One of the key things I did as well to assist that is consider that I was white Western. A lot of them were Asian on there. So they have a different concept about culture, the psyche, who we are as people. So me putting across my views was only one aspect. So I used an interpreter to put what I was saying in the key points, but they were putting it across with the cultural inferences that they need to understand what I was saying. And we had a lot of Russian language speakers as well. So it was given in a third time there. So there was an Asian element, a Russian element, and that took up the bulk of the crew. Yeah, so I think as a leader, we've not got to be ego-driven, think that we're going to tick a box and or create some course, or I'm going to do a lecture, I'm going to do this. If you put some thought into it, as an ally and think about what support or assistance they might need. And don't think just because you need it, they will need it. But think about what it is you're going to talk about. And in that specific sort of scenario, it was tough times. So having a consideration for the Asian and Russian element, not only with interpretation, but putting those points across in language that they would understand and using the cultural differences that then helped them absorb that was really useful.
And well, it's interesting you say that because I notice I'm Canadian and we're fairly similar to the US, but there is some forms of miscommunication, even though we speak the same language and we're living on the same continent. And then you take the trip over to Europe and it's like night and day. What is appreciated in the US and Canada, in North America as a whole.
This is just the beauty of people because we are all different. So even myself in the UK, and of course the colonials that made up the non-native Americans as Canadians or US citizens do have a different language, even though we're speaking English, because even Microsoft termed it English UK and English US so that we would know the difference. Because even if you think about a car, and where you come from is a fender. Nearly every part of the car has got a different term. We call it the boot, you guys call it the trunk, but the bonnet is what comes to the front, but you call it the hood or the lid.
Even coming down to French names, I'm telling you.
Yes. Yeah. Why are they French?
No idea, but they're French fries to me.
So we're talking the same language, but what we wish to describe certain elements, even on a basis where we're all talking English, can be totally alien. I'm totally different. When I've been to America a few times and have been fortunate to vacation with my family and that. And one of the terms that I couldn't get used to was the fact that they would sit down on their fanny, and the term using a fanny pack, it just wasn't in our language, trying to work out what they were trying to say. And of course, cigarettes are known in the UK as fags. So there was a whole different sort of set of cultural differences, even when you're, say, speaking the same language. So
I think even down to the fact that in Canada, I mean, I am rather outspoken even in Canada, but in comparison to Europe, some people actually think I'm rude and rather obnoxious. They may be right to a certain degree.
Maybe some truth in it somewhere.
But I mean, in Canada, you just speak what you think, and just, you don't necessarily have to make it pretty. And
yeah.
It's more to the point. In Europe, I think people are very coy about how they speak, and they sort of circle around a lot to get to the point.
Very true, and it's quite stereotypical. But, I mean, even my generation, we still use a lot of flowery English if I'm in a regular conversation. It's like Victorian times, or some of the great poets had a great influence on how we would express ourselves. So we put far too many words in a sentence that we really need to. And like you're saying, Canadians or Americans, sometimes with their language, can appear to our ears to be a bit brash, but it's not. In most cases, it's because they're more precise. They're just using the words that they need to without the flowery edges around it. And of course, throughout Europe, even with different languages, that there are stereotypical differences where the Italian is obviously very flowery, romanticized, if you like, whereas the Germans are quite abrupt, only the minimum words to get the job done.
I think the Germans are worse than me, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's interesting. When we just even talk about things like doing business or daily life, going into a store, ordering a coffee, et cetera, if there is that much misunderstanding, then you head out to sea and are isolated for months on end.
Yeah.
And trying to dealing with your mental health. And that is something that even takes that extra step. It is difficult, but I do think that, as you said, if we just look within ourselves and try to be decent human beings with empathy, that so much more can be overcome.
And that's the key words there. So it transcends all these cultural, religious, or gender differences. If you are just a decent human being, it takes a lot of building blocks, if you like, to get to that level. And it's elements of emotional intelligence. It's elements of empathy. It's elements of respect or consideration for others that build. All those blocks come together to make for you to be a decent human being. So we're, like you say, it's months on end and you're on a project, you're on a ship, you're isolated from the outside world in so much as if you don't get on with someone, you can't go down the pub or the bar, or you can't escape for a weekend or have a weekend off. All those elements that the usual landlubbers have the luxury of doing and recharging their batteries or blowing off steam, whatever it is they need to do. For a seafarer, you've got to have that mentality and that strength and resilience. And there's another word that was bandied around, but true resilience means in all forms of how you are as a person, but more importantly, how you react with others around you, your colleagues, co-workers, or those with you on project, makes the difference. And of course, there's always a bad apple. We can't always be great. We can't always have our A game every day. Yeah, I have a bad head. Some days we've got a little log on left. But this is the way of the world.
No one's perfect. I think there needs to be that understanding that nobody is perfect. We are all flawed in our own way. And we have to accept everybody exactly the way they are and celebrate it.
We're not robots or machines. And like you say, the pandemic period proved that however great you think you are in your job or what you do, we all do need to take a step back sometimes or look a little bit longer in the mirror in the morning and think about who you are, how you're going to interact, what you're going to do, and not thinking just about yourself. I think that's another key thing. Yeah, you have to survive how long your period is or how long the contract is. It's a long time before you go back home, but in your head and how you go about your business or how you propose yourself as a professional and go through your working day, part of that is having very good understanding of the concepts and social world that you're in, and having an understanding of the different cultures and different personalities and of the different people that you're going to interact with on a daily basis. And again, it's not like an office where you just do a 7 or 8 hour a day and then go home. This is 12 hour shifts or split shifts, or because it's 24/7 operations. So yeah, coming into contact with all those different people and considering how you can be an ally. And I think that comes back to sort of notions I have about paying it forward or payback time or scratching each other's back or having each other's back, having a buddy out there, because sometimes it comes from not the guy that you're working with every day or your best buddy. Sometimes that little bit of support or that kindness can come from somebody totally different that you don't interact with on a daily basis or within your discipline. Yeah, there's quite a lot of examples like that. I've had a steward or a chef come up to me and say, oh, how are you doing today? It's been a tough day out there. And you think, wow, somebody's actually considered me. They don't work alongside me on the back deck. They do a completely different job. They have a different rotation. They're from a different culture, a different nationality. But somebody actually took the time to ask how I was doing and so.
You know what? In life, I think sometimes a simple thank you or job well done does far more than any medication a doctor could give you for your mental health. Just pure acknowledgement of being you and being appreciated for being you and being appreciated for being on this planet.
And I think a lot of how mariners and the seafarers especially do have that strong resilience is because they have more in-depth or greater respect for the people that they're working around and have the knowledge, because I'm sure they've been in that position before as well and thought, oh, somebody was there to help me, just assist me with this. So I think that's sort of something that's in the back of your minds all the time. So there is that case of looking out for each other. But yeah, we should all do it a lot more and yeah, do it with a lot more respect sometimes. Yeah. Because we all have a job to do. We all want to get that job done. And we all want to be proficient and efficient and safe at the same time. But yeah, you also got to clock yourself, right, we're not robots. Somebody needs that break. Somebody's been in that 33 degrees heat for the last 2 hours. We need to rotate people, whatever it is. So it's, yeah.
So it really comes down to respect, understanding, and treating each other equally. Yeah.
Yeah, so we've talked about etiquette and attitude, and this is like the normal things, whether you're on a small yacht or a mega yacht or moving boxes around the world or on all these great big heavy lift crane vessels. It's still people at the end of the day, and it's the people that make things happen. And although the bosses on shore, the project managers or the charters, they all want it to happen yesterday and they all want it to happen for like 2 cents instead of $1 million, some form of appreciation from onshore, the fact that they're multi-million-dollar project, does come down to how these seafarers are actually operating their equipment, driving their cranes, using the tools, navigating the vessel. I think that would go a long way. And sometimes, because seafarers are over the horizon and out of view, being on the end of a WhatsApp or an email and they just with their own frustrations, just sending those communications when it's received at the other end with no context. I think that's where quite a lot of frustrations do happen. And I noticed during the pandemic that those that did really well were those that were onshore that had some empathy, primarily because they'd served at sea before and thought about how they were going to communicate what invariably was a lot of bad news, or sorry, we can't do this, or we can't supply you that yet. But it was done in a much better way.
Kinder, gentler.
Yeah, and it's kinder. Why shouldn't it be? I think post-pandemic, I would hate to think that everyone's gone back to the old ways, or there should have been a new normal. But I'm sure you've heard the same sort of stories, that there is no real concern about mental health and well-being anymore, and that boat's sailed. And back to the old days of just drilling the bridge with all the demands via email with no context, empathy or feeling behind it. So when I say we've got a long way to go, I think that's a way to sum it up.
You're part of the COPE working group as well, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And it's a fantastic body of people, all maritime professionals, some land, some seagoing. So it's a good mix. Yeah, there's diversity in thought, in gender, in this working group specifically. And we're doing great things. And I think if we can mirror that or encourage others to do likewise, then the maritime and possibly the world would be a better place for all of us.
Well, I would welcome you back, because I think the more often we have these talks, that possibly we can eventually change one person at a time.
That's what it takes, isn't it? Yeah. We're on the long road, so it's not a sprint. But if we're all making or delivering some good in the world, and somebody picks up on that and takes that forward, then yeah, hopefully that'll spread.
Thank you. Nice. Pay it forward. Pay it forward.
Always. You got to have the passion for it like we have. So most definitely pay it forward.
You have been listening to Gordon Foote right here on Yachting International Radio. My name is Rhea. I have been your host. We'll see you again next time.